by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we go, let me introduce the guys.
The ones that are left.
Wow, we're a little thin, you know? Bill leaves, and wow.
We miss you, Bill,
That's
by the
right,
way.
We do miss you. Over here on my right, we've got the one and only Diego Stucco.
Hi, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
And across the table, we've got the one and only Rob Arbitier.
Hello, Mike.
And today, joining us as our guest is the, well, actor, voiceover, and host of a podcast, Bob Bendick. Bob, welcome.
Hola, Miguel. You're so wonderful to be here.
See, you know what? She feels comfortable already.
Well, introduce me as an actor. I got to do something, you know, actor-ish. Right.
Or you can do your announcer voice.
Hello, my name is Bob Bendick. Long fly ball to deep left center.
There you go. Now, Bob has a podcast titled The Bob Bendick Podcast.
Me and my lawyers worked on it for a few hours. And, thank you for plugging it, by the way.
And, yeah, so you're going to pick up another 7 listeners because...
Well, I don't want to steal yours away.
Yeah, well, hey, that's one more.
I think we're down the same.
But anyhow, Bob, thank you for joining us. And we're going to talk a little bit. We had Heather last time, and she was awesome. She talked a little bit about VO, but now I wanted to bring Bob on mainly because we're going to talk a little bit about technique that we didn't get to last time as far as miking and mics and things
We've been
like
trying
that.
To avoiding that, but
well,
it keeps coming back.
We're on the Audio Nowcast, so we're going to kind of help people out every now and then. Mm-hmm. And we're going to answer a couple of listener questions and all kinds of fun stuff. First thing I want to tell you, though, is I just got back from a vacation. I drove out to Texas, and
They got planes now.
Hey, you know, a road trip. You got to do a road trip at least once in your life. Pack up the kids.
How many horses did you take?
It was only 1,400 miles.
14!
That's like 2 10-hour days with a stop in Las Cruces. Wow. I've never been so happy to be in New Mexico in all my life.
And only one CD.
That's right. No, are you kidding? Come on, the kids. We had no less than 3 iPods, 2 computers, a DVD player. I mean, a Game Boy and a PSP.
And your trusty iPad.
They were. Yeah.
And they gave it a little Wi-Fi to 3G.
I did. I had my little my Wi-Fi. And let me tell you. Can I tell you? I had connection almost the whole trip. I was actually streaming internet radio pretty much the whole time.
Well, wait a minute. What is this? What did you have?
A MiFi, it's a little hotspot. Basically a cell phone without any phone function. It's just all data. It's by Sprint. And
it creates a little Wi-Fi hotspot in the car.
Exactly.
And you had signal in the middle of nowhere?
I had signal.
Is it a monthly thing that you got to pay for that?
Yeah, it's monthly.
You know what? I got to say, this sounds like National Lampoon's Geek Vacation. Completely.
I'll tell you what. I had a lot of that stuff, especially for my kids.
How many megahertz was it broadcast? That's really interesting.
When I was a kid, we did a road trip. And we went to Wisconsin, and there was none of that. And I would go to like the little cafes that we stop at, and I would take straws and toothpicks, and I would play with straws and toothpicks.
And you made a Wi-Fi hotspot
out of that.
So believe me, when you've got kids, you'll spend thousands of dollars to keep them busy and quiet.
Exactly. And you know, it was great. We had a great time. But the game changer for me though was. Just to realize that it's all changing slowly but surely. And the fact that I could have Wi-Fi and stream radio, I was listening to the LA sports station, you know, on my whole trip. And it blew my mind. I'd be out in the middle of nowhere, nothing around.
So when there's a power outage, do you just freak out?
No, because I have plenty of battery.
He ceases to exist, actually.
He's got a generator.
He's going to have to go back to conversation, you know?
You know what? We had plenty of conversation. I had a great time with the kids. If you look on Facebook, you'll see everything.
They would have their little iPods going.
They were Skyping from the front of the car.
Yeah, no, no, Dad, can we stop?
And yeah, that was the new iPhone.
They're tweeting back and forth. That's how's this Wi-Fi connection? Yeah. These are all the conversations you're having.
I could see you through my camera, just, you know.
I've got four bars in the backseat. How about you guys?
You know what? There's... So I use technology. I'm not afraid to say,
man, I'm with you.
I'm a tech user. You know, if it's available,
you're a Sonos social networker.
You know what? It's awesome. It just makes your quality of life that much better.
I'm with you. I'm a total early adopter. I love everything right now. As a matter of fact, my new favorite thing is sitting over there. I've got stereo Bluetooth headphones for my iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I can also answer phone calls on it. It's got a mic. Because you get a standard little Bluetooth thing. It's in your ear, but you can't listen to anything on your iPhone as an iPod, like a
mostly
podcast.
Mostly not even the
music.
Conversation sometimes.
Yeah. Right. And I always have earbuds in because I'm always listening to podcasts. I'm always listening to music or Pandora or whatever on my iPhone. So I always had the little white earbuds in.
Right.
But that's a line. Mm-hmm. And that gets hooked on something, snagged on something, gets yanked out of my ears, gets stepped on. I'm replacing those constantly.
Right.
So I got these great little wireless Bluetooth headsets, and
do
I realized
work with iPods?
Yeah, if it's got Bluetooth, works with anything with Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
nice. And it's beautiful.
It's good for the gym.
And there's different. Great. If it was me, you guys would be crucifying me right now.
Of course.
And there's different designs out there, and these I like the best. Some of them are a little heavy because there is a little thing that goes like a line on the back of your neck between the two of them, and it sits on your ear like sunglasses,
right?
You know, and then puts a thing in your ear. And these I like because they have like a little softy rubber thing on the actual, you know, speakers that sort of funnels into your ear. So it's not like when earbuds are setting in your ears.
It's a neural cortex thing.
It does. It locks in. You ever seen Lawnmower Man? It's like that.
Nice.
No, but they work great. It's Plantronics, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love like the smartest new thing to do smart things with. Let's use it.
It's, you know what? There's nothing wrong with being connected out in the middle of the desert.
You can take a flight of stairs, but they invented the goddamn elevator.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mike, tonight you found a friend. I'm telling you.
And Bob's welcome back every time.
Yeah. And after this, Mike and I are going to go out and surgically get our iPads attached to our chest like Twiggy and Buck Rogers.
It's going to be the next step, believe me.
All I'm saying is, you know, technology is out there, and you might as well use it. It's awesome.
I concur.
Right, Rob?
Oh, absolutely. And if you get a chance to see a new episode of Futurama where they have their own version of the iPhone, you should check it out.
I saw that. I already saw it. Yeah, the new season's very funny.
Pretty hilarious.
But anyway, it was definitely a great trip, and had a great time out there. And just technology, boy, it's changing. And before you know it, we're going to have internet in your car, and it makes perfect sense, especially when you can start streaming, you know, radio stations.
And I've got a practical question, because you had to go out and get this extra thing. And to get this signal. And I have always thought that if any car that has satellite radio should have an option for Wi-Fi. If you're receiving a signal, like a lot of people have internet connection in their home via the dish, that's satellite. So why doesn't satellite radio also have, like, you know, for an extra whatever a month or just a flat fee, you get a box?
It is called 4G.
Huh?
It is. It's called 4G.
4G, well, you think that's as good as satellite signals? I don't know about it. But
Wi-Fi, I mean, you need a hub. I mean, you need.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like if you have satellite radio in your car, you got Sirius XM, and you have a little extra thing you can dongle off of it that creates the Wi-Fi hotspot that just sort of plugs into your car. You pay extra for it from the manufacturer.
But it's a different technology though, because the Wi-Fi stuff has to be bidirectional. You have to be able to send stuff to the internet as well as receive it.
Well, they do. You know,
I guess it would just be a little extra thing that they would add on to whatever's in your car that's receiving the signal that could also
talk
to a cell tower.
Have it. They've got AutoNet. I just looked it up on the internet.
Yeah.
And I know Ford and some of the big three are
– They do have.
They're going to be
– But they're using the cellular system, not satellite.
That's what you really want to be doing, is Wi-Fi on your computer while you're driving.
No.
Bad idea.
But that's just it.
Road trips.
You can put limitations. Like on my Prius, it's like I can't search my phone book while I'm driving. But as soon as I stop, I can search my phone book all that I want. And I think it's going to be the same way. You're not going to be able to, like, you know, doing your Facebook while you're driving. But for, like, streaming.
Once they get the voice recognition technology.
So when you're on vacation, there's no excuse to, like, I left my – I didn't have my phone. I didn't have a phone. My batteries went
– I mean, you choose – I – you know, I – I didn't take phone calls, you know, but I still, that's because I chose not to take phone calls. And you're on vacation, so people shouldn't expect you. Anyway, before we turn this into a travel show, I'm just going to tell people that there's a lot of opportunities out there, and definitely with the internet streaming for music and for podcasts and for all kinds of different outlets for audio. So it's really a good time to be a content creator.
All I know is I took my iPad, showed people some music programs, and my iPad disappeared amongst kids and adults. A sea of them playing drums and the little chorus vibey thing. Yeah. And next thing you know, where did my iPad go?
Yeah, what are you doing letting go? See? I show people, but it
stays 6-year-old
with me.
And he goes, Dad, can I show a friend?
I know.
There's 100 people now. Ooh.
Hey, but that's for my iPhone 3GS. That's like my son. He can play with that. That's like, okay, you can play with that. I've got the new one. You don't touch that one. Anyway, but all that to say is it's just the game. It's a game changer, and even travel. You know, you get this technology, and you see all these
sponsored by Apple
things. No, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be Apple. It could be Android. There's a lot of phones out there. You know, there's a lot of different things. All right, moving on, guys. I got an email from one of our 7 listeners, and he asked a question, and I don't know if we can answer it. You know, upon pondering the question itself.
Let's try.
But he has a small studio, and he has $100 that he wants to put into a studio to make it better. And he asked us, if we had $100 and we had a small studio, what would we get?
Paint.
If we had all the bases covered to help our studio out. And
so it's already a functioning studio.
It's already a functioning studio. It's a small functioning studio. And you know what? I don't even know if $100.
I think I have an idea.
But
why don't you, I would say, why don't you do a party? I mean, promote your studio. Spend some money on drinks and food.
Genius!
No, really, I mean, now you got the studio running. What are you waiting for clients, right?
Look at that.
See, invest it, wait 10 years, and you got $200.
A little something. And to think I was going to say a good mic stand.
No, $100 party. $100 party, that's going to be Cheetos and Boone's Farm.
Actually, the MXL always has like $50 to $100 will get you like 10 mics.
That's true. What about you, Rob? You have any cheap ideas?
I'd say business cards.
Yeah.
That's not bad
It makes sense. Because you got to
get out there, drum up some more business so you have more than $100.
Well, buy a printer. You can't afford toner, but you can get a printer.
All right.
Well, cards.
And my suggestion remains a really good wastebasket.
Shiny new design.
Go to Bed Bath & Beyond. Go Nuts. Yeah, the kind where you step on the pedal and the two lids open. Like Battlestar Galactica. It's... a dream come true.
It's not realistic to think of any kind of piece of equipment for under $100 that's going to be an important thing. You can buy somebody who has a studio, you could probably buy them a cute, you know, a gift for the studio, some gadget or something. But at this point, save the $100.
Or you can, you know, find a couple good cables and replace the ones that are bad. You know, I don't know.
It depends what the guy already has. Yeah. I mean,
And depending upon the conduit for our listeners.
Depending on ventilation, he also might just want to get a case of Febreze.
He can send the money over. We can spend them in drinks.
Rob's house and go. He'll give him $100 and go through all the old stuff.
Yeah.
You can come visit for $100.
I like that.
Sold.
Wow.
Sold.
You know, right now
we have some sink livers we'd sell for $100.
How sad is that? Not true.
Well, no, wait a second. Honestly, you can go to Radio Shack and kind of go to town for $100, can't you? Get some good Tandy, some realistic.
get a new phone.
It would sound like you shot it through some sort of Fisher Price object, but it'd be fantastic.
It'd be more expensive, yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? Right now, there's a bunch of people that are hitting delete on their email that they're composing.
Well, they really all over that guy. Maybe I shouldn't send him an email.
I hope that answers
your
question.
We had phone number 1, 2, 3, and 4 ready to send an email, but now
send your money,
anymore.
Your $100 to 966 Audio Nowcast.
Yeah, once we can pull up $1,000, we'll give you good advice.
All right. Well, moving on. By the way, I don't know if you noticed, but we have a new voice amongst us.
Mm-hmm.
And joining us is Maria Mendoza. Maria,
welcome. Hi, boys. How are you?
And Maria, she was the voice of the H1N1 public service announcements that were done in the state of California. So you heard her both.
Wash your hands, everyone.
You heard her both in English and in Spanish.
So that was you scaring the crap out of us.
In a very sultry voice.
Oh, it's very soothing. actually. Hey, if you're going to go down with swine flu, I want to hear that. Sorry, Mr. Bendick, you're in hospice care because you got the swine flu. But wait, turn on that commercial louder. Nice.
So Maria's going to sit in with us and chime in if we have another brilliant question like the last one.
That was a phenomenal brainstorming session, I must add.
It was spontaneous.
It was spontaneous. Anyhow, Maria, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
But, well, as long as we're going with listener questions.
There's more?
I've got another one.
All right.
Oh, you know, actually, I have an answer for that $100 thing. Yeah. It's actually serious that just came to me.
What?
For $100 these days, you can get a...
package rubber bands?
No. You can get a backup drive and back up your data.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But you know what? That felt too serious. Can we go back to making fun of him?
Man,
that's actually not a bad idea.
That is. See, I knew if I asked you guys, you'd be all over this thing.
I still like the idea of the party.
No,
I mean,
the party's good too.
You can have a backup party.
For $200.
In case the first one doesn't work right.
Yeah, exactly.
You can always buy a tree.
Yes.
All right. Well, moving on.
Moving on.
Next question. Actually, this one, and Diego brought this up, and I thought that was really, it was a really good idea because we have a good example. But
so it wasn't really from me.
What did you do?
I don't know.
What did you do?
I'm about to tell you.
Why do you give him ideas?
Let's talk sound design really quick. Sound design. Diego, why don't you
the question, sometimes I receive emails from people saying, I just love what you do. I would like to start in sound design. What should I do? And it leaves me with this question open. It's like, okay, what kind of sound design would you like to do? Would you like to play trees? Would you like to program synths? Would you like to do video games, films? What is exactly? So most of the time, I don't really know what to answer because I think – each specific sector can have a different question, a different answer, and so it would just make sense, you know, for this guy to say, I would like to start working in sound design for films, and then in that way I can just send email over to Scott.
Bye.
And Scott gets maybe one or two
a thousand
hour.
A day.
But I thought that was actually really – people don't realize that sound design is more – when I say sound design, there's a lot of different areas of sound design. There's sound design like what Diego does with that's very musical and for the synths and things like that. And then there's sound design that Scott does, which is motion pictures, high-end movies, things of that nature. And you're right. It's a great way – between you two guys, is there a place where you, where would be the split? Where do you go? Is it like Scott, do you do a lot of musical sound effects now? I mean, it's, I know you do because of your Berkeley background. You approach sound design.
Yeah, composers just love me. I do quite a bit. And really what it comes down to is, it's very simple, is record everything in your house that you could think of. And we're talking about hitting things, smashing things, dripping things. If it's a windy day, open your window and have it whistle and play the storm of the whistling wind. I mean, the house is a plethora of material. Put it in your computer, pitch it, reverse it, manipulate it, and you can come up with thousands of sounds just in your house. On a laptop, get some software. It could be anything from SoundForge. It could be BIOS. Anything. It could be some little dinky program, some freeware program. But take it and see what you can do with it. Start listening. And as a sound designer, you have to be an audio photographer. And you have to remember what things sound like. Then you have to start thinking about what do things that you think sound like, a.k.a. Hollywood Punch. There's things that you think sound a certain way that do not exist in nature. Like when I used to do helicopters, I've done so many shows that when helicopters come at you, they get quieter, not louder. And most people don't realize that. But every time in a show, it's got to get louder and it zooms and it rocks the whole room below you.
Do they really get quieter?
Yep,
really?
Because of physics. When the low thwop of a Huey,
wow.
It's moving air. Well, when it comes close to you, there's not as much air to move. So it whooshes by you, it was, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, away. And it's actually the opposite, but everybody thinks they want to hear a sound of a helicopter that's really quiet, and it gets really low and thumpy
as
it passes
you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It doesn't exist in nature.
Wow. You learn something new every day.
But what happens is, I think, you know, if I say to somebody Bugs Bunny sound effects or Disney or Warner Brothers, all of a sudden in their head, people of a certain age will automatically hear sounds,
right,
whether they're musical, whether sound effects. People of a younger age may not hear it. Cars, the car buys are changing. Good old V8s, blah, 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 as they go by, now they're really quiet. I got to record cars going uphill to let the engine stress to actually get a car by, because cars don't make sounds anymore.
Wow.
You get a lot of tire noise on the road,
more than
engine noise.
It is. I mean, I think
if it's not a Prius, just a regular gas-powered car, I noticed that. I've noticed that growing up as a kid. I grew up in L.A., so there's always freeways around, and I remember I used to hear engine noise from freeways if you were nearby. Now what you hear is the tires.
Yeah.
You're not hearing engines.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that
you
think.
I mean, something. Right.
The strangest thing we did, we were hired by Nike for years. We did all this Nike work, and I remember we were recording all of these athletics, field and track, or track and field, and we wanted to record all these sprinters. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. We had really high-powered mics right on the surfaces, and they start running, and they all hear and there's no sound.
You and know, they're gone in 2 seconds, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had them spread out, and we're like, this is great. And we had four guys, and we're on the whole track, and we're recording, and it was like, thumbs up, and boom, hit the recorders, and bang goes the gun. It's the only thing you heard. And it's, and then you go, and we're like, and everyone's looking at each other like, what's that? So then what we had to do was we had to, but we said we
quick, get me a Foley stage.
You know, yes, what we did was we grabbed one of our best runners, and he had to push us. And he was basically running in place.
Yeah.
slowly, just to get some kind of traction.
Wow.
With spikes on dirt.
Right, right.
Because that's what people think they want to hear. But real tracks are made out of rubber, and they're meant to make no sound. So it's amazing how life is incredibly boring sounding. So you have to animate everyday sounds that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to answer the question, I think what Scott just described, I think would work well for a demo that you would like to submit to someone like him, you know, if you would like to do films.
Right.
But if you would like to do music, I would suggest create sounds and play them. I mean, create something that is musical and try that sound in a musical context and see how it works. And so basically, my suggestion would be pick the field where you want to be,
right,
and then just create something that, you know, it's nice and somehow original as much as you can.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Like parking garage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those are beautiful places.
Bam! Slam the door, you got a kick drum.
And they also create tonal sounds because if the reverb is very interesting, you can do something.
Now, if someone wants to be a sound designer and design patches for, let's say, any of that Spectrasonic stuff, and you're listening to it, what do you cue in on?
I can tell you how I started. When I started doing something for Korg, and I went to the trade show, and I said, I'd like to program something for you guys, and they said, do you have anything from us? I said, maybe. I actually had one little piece of gear. I had an M3R, which was the expander of the M1. So they didn't really take me seriously. But when I sent the patches that I did for that one, I said, maybe there's something interesting here. So I would suggest if you go talk with a company, at least have one of the products the company produce and create something out of it which is different from the library. And so you can show that you can, you know, think out of the box and really expand the idea of that specific product.
It's something that a lot of people may not realize, that the way that a lot of the synthesizer companies get their sounds is they actually go to their high-end users and ask them to do patches. I mean, I've done a zillion patches for different companies. I know Scott has too. Andrew has, who hasn't been here for a while. But, you know, we've done a lot of patches for different manufacturers. And these companies have an endless hunger for good sounds. It's not very hard to get in the door. If you actually have something good to hear, it's not hard to get through the door. They're hungry for it.
That's actually where I started, was creating synth sounds.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
call music data.
You can always ask permission to send a demo over. I mean, worst case, they say, I love your stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, just find the product manager. It's not hard to find at each company who the product manager is for
synth.
And you can get through the door, but they have a lot of people who are very talented working on these sounds. So, you know, don't go there and say, hey, I think I'd like to do sound someday.
No, it doesn't work like that. No,
you got to just do it. Just do it
and
make sure you love doing it. And then once you have some stuff to present, then you present it.
And there you go. I mean, there's a good example of the different types of sound design. You know, you've got the musical thing, or you've got the I wouldn't even say realistic. It's more like hyper-realistic or interpretive realism.
It
right?
is interpretive.
And
sound design.
Because sound design really does span, and there are some composers have people that are creating sounds for them. I think Hans Zimmer's got like four or five guys that do nothing but create sounds for him every day of the week.
Wow.
So as well as the whole concept is to create sounds that don't necessarily exist in nature that has an emotional impact, whether it's sound effects or music, they're both going for the same thing.
Right. And when it comes to video games, I would suggest that you also know a little bit of the engine of how video games works, because most of the time when they hire you as a sound designer, they ask you to do the sounds and to implement the sounds inside the engine. So in that case, you should have a little bit of, you know, understanding of coding and the application that works in the engine of the video game.
And also from sound effects, one of the things that every sound effects person has a passion. Like somebody loves guns. They know everything about guns, what they do, the cyclic rate, how to manipulate the bullets and the gunpowder. Yeah. Other people love cars. Some people like airplanes. Some people like, anything dealing with water. So I think that if you find something you're passionate and you know a lot about the things that you enjoy in life, then you kind of become a little bit of an expert in that area.
Right.
Yeah, obviously, you know, don't try to do everything. It doesn't make any sense. Focus on few things and make them well.
Wow. This has been a great, great first half, man. We are here for the listeners because now we know the difference between sound design, how to spend $100, and why you should use technology.
And I'd like to just add, Maria, shut up. God.
I know.
Yeah. Hey, wait. If you have $100 and you want to be a sound designer, go to Home Depot.
Yes.
Yeah, we go to Home Depot and bang things together, blow into things, and people go, I don't get this.
Or buy a very small portable recorder, and don't get afraid that it's just a cheap technology. You can start doing stuff with that as well.
All right, well, hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk all things voiceover with Bob. We're going to talk about his podcast and a little bit about...
No, I'm done. I'm done talking, I'm sorry.
It's my turn.
So, but you can't say we were not there for the listeners on this first half hour. All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were here for you guys, answering your questions. Just want to let you know that. I'm talking to the listeners. Rob's looking at me like, for me? but right now, I want to talk to Bob. And Bob has a great podcast, like we said before, if you want to plug it.
Thank you very much. It's called The Bob – well, not The Bob. Actually, there is no The. It's not like it's unlike the Beatles. It's just BobBendickPodcast.com. It's also on iTunes. Just Bob Bendick, just like it sounds. Bob, Ben –
Dick. Can you please spell the last part?
Bob Hope, Big Ben, Dick Van Dyke, Bob Ben Dick. You'll find it. I'm the only one.
And like I said before, I met Bob in a VO session that we were doing for an electronics company. And Bob is really great on the mic. He does a lot of great voices. Bob, why don't you just give a little bit of history on how you got started in VO and what you do in your acting? And
well, ever since I was a kid, I always liked, performing, being center of attention.
Really?
I'm an only child. Very guilty, divorced parents.
Nice.
So I was super indulged. But I always liked performing and entertaining school plays and all that kind of stuff just growing up. And then when I became an adult, I didn't get into acting as a profession. It was I actually worked in retail management for 17 years. And
what store?
Various. The last two companies I worked for were Brookstone and Apple. I actually was one of the managers at the Apple Store with the Grove.
Still got connections?
Really?
I have some.
Wow.
iPad?
Bob's coming back.
I got to tell you, yeah, I have a few connections. So
it's
I,
dealer.
Yeah, when I was working there, I became all my friends and family's, tech supports. Everybody I know is like, hey, man, can you get me a discount on a PowerBook? You know, come on, help a brother out. And so all these friends that I never talked to would call me. It's like, hey, man. I go, hey. So, what's up? Not much, buddy. What's going on? So you still work at Apple? Conversations would start like that. But I stopped doing that. But in the last few years of being in retail management, I started getting involved with, like, improv groups around town. And I'm still kind of an alumni member of Acme Comedy Theater, which is kind of like the Groundlings or something. You know, it's sketch and improv. And did that for many years. And I guess it's maybe 10 years ago now, I decided – I mean, I've always been interested in voiceover acting and primarily animation and stuff. And I'd learn a little bit about certain voiceover actors that they do, like, all these different voices. And I guess it all sort of starts when we're kids and we hear about, Mel Blanc. And you realize that he's everybody in all these cartoons, Bugs Bunny and Sylvester and Tweety, and he's having conversations with himself. And then as I get older, I learn about some other names and actors and stuff. And so it always fascinated me. So about 10 years ago, I found somebody who had a VO class, took the class, and a great sound engineer, a buddy of hers, did my VO demo, a guy by the name of Michael Woodrum. Nobody knows him. Fantastic. I don't know. You guys
he's great.
He's great. Oh, man. He's actually here in Burbank, not far from here. I can't remember the name of his studio. But he made this great voiceover demo for me that I just sort of started playing for my actor friends. It's all... There's always networking
right.
in any industry. I mean, if you want to, like, tighten bolts and get in the UAW and work on the assembly line in Detroit, you got to know somebody to know somebody. Well, anyway, I'm in a network of other actors. And so they're like, well, my agent handles voiceover, and I know a guy, and I know about a job, and it's a non-union, and they just want people off the street. And you start doing it, it builds. And then there you go. And I do a lot of commercial VO more than I do real character work, but I do both.
Yeah, but your commercial VO, Bob's the voice from God. Bob's the announcer guy. The announcer guy. Oh. He does it really well.
It was very difficult, too. Some of the things we were working on were like 10 and 15 second spots.
Those are fun.
And you've got to give out all the technical, details of the Hitachi 48-inch LCD, DLP TV.
Breath.
1290. No.
No.
Breathing. You're not allowed to breathe.
60 seconds.
You better be a didgeridoo player. You got to learn your circular breathing. You cannot. You got to be Sinatra. You got to be able to go and then go 15 straight seconds of just every syllable and every consonant and every vowel known to the English speaking world. And that's the tough part. That's the complicated part of voiceover. And also, like you were saying with sound design, you got to paint a picture with sound, basically. The difficult part for an actor, if it's a big broad character, that's kind of easy. But the more subtle stuff is making the 48-inch Hitachi LED DLP TV $1,299, $200 off regular price sound interesting,
right.
And so learning that, or if there's a list,
and you have to do it in one or two takes.
What's that?
And you have to do it in one or two takes.
Yeah, you got to get it down. Yeah. Getting it down right, and it's interesting. One thing I also learned that if any voiceover actors are listening, or if anybody's interested in how it works, but there are times also when you're listing things. You know what I mean? It's a commercial or something, and it's a list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of something. Like a sports store's having a sale. It's like soccer balls, footballs, baseball bats, right. Whatever. But as you're listening, it can't have the same tone for each thing, or else people are like, I forgot the first nine things he just said.
Yeah.
So it's got to be, soccer balls, baseballs, footballs, baseball bat. Like, you find the intonation
Everyone,
and the tone.
Right.
And the.
That's so true, because I can't tell you how many times I've worked with VO people that weren't pros that – it sounds like they're
reading the dictionary.
Yeah. You give it an inflection. You find the valleys and canyons, and you inflect for no reason sometimes. It doesn't even make sense. Like, you know, Caribbean or Caribbean, and then you mush them both together, and you've got somebody's attention because you said Caribbean. Like Bob Marley or something. You know what I mean? It's like you find the hills and valleys.
You know, that's a great hint, man. That really
it's,
is.
It's a lot of ups and downs, and even when you're just saying a sentence, come in Wednesday because the sale will be done by Thursday. You know, it's like you got to have the up, and that was overly announcery, but it's got to be, it's got to have character. It's got to have a lot of character to it. Otherwise, you're just, you should come in on Wednesday because we're having a sale and it's going to be a lot of fun and we got lots of good stuff for sale.
How was that? Was that good?
It was great.
Yeah, I want to just give you one more, but this time, take the stick out of your ass. Have a little life in it there, zombie.
Right. It's just every word has to have its own life. Yeah. Every single word.
Every single word. And that can be kind of complicated when you're doing...
And you've got to act through your voice, which is the most important. Because when you look at a lot of normal actors on the screen, some have great voices and some have terrible voices. Some women are amazing to look at and sound terrible.
Yes.
And some sound amazing.
Yeah.
And sometimes visually aren't the same.
But, although Jennifer Tilly has both.
Yeah.
Really cute voice and nice cleavage. That's the most interesting thing. If you're doing commercial stuff, it's always fun. It's finding the life in every single word, the character, even if it's the.
Exactly. Because you know what? A lot of the times, just reading, we don't really give much time or attention to that. Mm-hmm. And in a commercial VO, it's so incredibly important.
That's right, because when I was listening to the H1N1, you portrayed the fact that if I didn't wash my hands, I was going to die.
It's in your hands to stop it.
Well, but that's great, man. That's some great advice, and it's really interesting to see the different roads that people get to go into voiceover. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you was, and we're going to open this up to everybody. I want to talk a little bit about the technique and the microphone. And like when you do your demo, do you read from your agent's house or do you have your own studio? How do you
when I audition?
Yeah, when you do audition.
I used to go into my agent all the time, but now I actually recently purchased for my podcast
$100.
A little bit more. A little bit more, actually. It was like
$199.
Between $200 and $300 was a portable digital recorder. It's by Tascam. It's DR2D is the model.
I got the same.
You got that one? It's a good one.
Yeah.
And it's a stereo, and I bought it from a company back east called The Sound Professionals. I believe they're in Philadelphia or something. Found them online, and they built for me a really long lav. Cord lavs, so I could, you know, if I can be mobile for my podcast. That's why I got it. But I got the lav mics that come into like a Y connector because there's only one line in. And it's like a standard headphone jack. And so I got that so we could sit as far away as I'm sitting from you guys, and I have plenty of cord. I got like 12 feet or something. And I got that for my podcast so I could be mobile because not everybody can come to me.
Right.
And I'm working on figuring out a way to record phone calls on the cheap. With my laptop and stuff. We'll figure that out.
Skype.
Yeah.
We'll talk later.
All right. Yeah, we'll talk. I use that Tascam to do my auditions. I get the info in an email. I record it. Then I plug it into the laptop. You can set that Tascam, as you know.
Yeah, it's a good recorder. I had the Edirol before, and this one sounds better. I mean,
yeah, I think it sounds great.
I paid less than you, though.
Nice.
Wow.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Listeners, he threw his head back.
He's not from out here.
And laughed so loud. He actually gave me a point and laughed. I thought that was only in cartoons. He pointed and laughed at me. Now, I could be remembering wrong, but it was about $200 or something. How much you get yours
still
for?
Less.
How much you get yours for?
I think I got it for $160, something
ooh,
like that.
You son of a...
I'm sorry. What do you want?
But anyway,
have a good
these things. But these things are great. You can set it for WAV or MP3 in a different. What are those things?
Different
kilobytes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And so I set it for the highest on MP3 because that's what the agent asks for is MP3.
Right.
I email it to him. And usually I'm, he'll get back to me and say, try it a little differently or whatever. Right. But, that's how I do it. And then he sends them in.
One of the things you could do as if you start doing character voices is find out which mics sound good with your voice. So if you want to go if you want to go with something thinner sounding, and there are occasions where you'll see actors that come in, because it is a tool.
Whether they bring in their own.
I remember when Don LaFontaine, he would get right up to that mic, and knowing how to work the mic.
Absolutely.
And how to work a different kind of mic. Is it a large diaphragm mic? Is it a condenser? Is it a shotgun mic?
Right.
Is it a lav mic? How do you, you know, how do you project? How do you perform? Do you want to be further away? Do you want to run up to it? Hit it by the side? There's so many techniques. That is really part of acting, part of voice acting.
It really is. It's like any on-camera, excuse me, or stage actor, they know how to use their body. And they know, even if it's there's a difference between acting on stage and acting on a camera. It's like, know yourself and what you can do and know your equipment.
Right. And one thing I would say is, if you're going to do a demo, for goodness sakes, do not, and I repeat this, do not use the microphone on your computer as your demo mic.
Because never.
I can't tell you how many sessions I've sat in where we're picking talent and they're going through all the auditions that are being sent in. And
so for $100, buy yourself a Shure 58.
Well, just buy yourself as much microphone as you can.
Is that a USB mic?
You know? Because it's going to make all the difference when you're going up against all the other people. Because literally, we start playing them. This one, this one, this one, this one. And you can just tell whatever you want to pop out. Yeah.
And there are really good USB mics out there. And most, if you have a laptop with GarageBand or something and a USB mic, and get yourself in a room. What I do, I've got this big padded headboard around my bed that I built.
Right.
And so I do my my audition into that.
Right.
Like I hold it, I use the recorder I just mentioned, and so I'm not getting a lot of bounce, a lot of room tone, a lot of room.
I like it.
You know what though? But I would even, I'd go one step further. If you can afford it, get yourself not a USB microphone. Go a little bit more. Go with maybe a little board that has a built-in audio interface and add a little compression. If you can work a compressor with your mic, it's going to thicken your voice up nice, and you're going to be able to get some volume, and your end of your words will not fall off. Everything will stay at a nice level, and you'll pop. Because I'll tell you what, when you come into the studio and it's time to record, you know, a lot of times you hear this demo, and if your demo is as close to what you're going to sound like in that studio, it's really going to give you an edge up than the person who has to imagine what's going to happen. Because you've got engineers, like, for instance, Rob, when you do VO at your studio, what kind of microphone setup do you usually – I mean, I know you can use a bunch of them, but what would be, like, your go-to microphone for voiceover?
It depends what kind of voiceover
we're
doing.
A male voiceover, but let's say you're doing a documentary and it's a male voiceover. Who's going to be the narrator?
Actually, there are two different styles that we go back and forth between. We just did a bunch of voiceover stuff for a documentary, and we ended up using a Neumann 49, which is a really pristine, high-end, basically vocal singing mic. That sounded great, but a lot of times if we want stuff to sound a little more announcery, we're either using the Shure. What's the big Shure? The SM7, the big one with the big windscreen.
Yeah,
on
I
it.
Think so. I think that's it's what the it SM7.
Is. That or we still use an RE20 sometimes.
All right, great.
And we also use the Heil mics. Heil makes some really inexpensive mics, you know, $100-$200 that blow the doors off the 57s and some of the traditional mics that people have been using. Right. And the Heils are very inexpensive. And
how do you spell that?
H-E-I-L.
Oh, okay.
Now,
really good mics.
When you record your VO, you're using the high-end. What kind of compression do you put on it? Or do you put any compression?
We put a little bit of compression. The main thing that we vary is where the people are in the room. In our main tracking room, there are these panels on the wall that are reflective on one side and they absorb on the other.
Right.
And if you flip out the panels, you can make sort of a little triangle of absorption, and kind of what Bob was saying he does, we'll face the mic into that, and it's a way of deadening the sound without me having to drag them up to my bedroom and have them talking to the headboard.
Hey, you know,
that's the same idea.
If she's hot and you pour in a storm, I'm saying it's cheaper than roofies.
That's true.
I mean, you've done a lot of recording, and when you audition people, do you get a I mean, how does that audition process happen with you?
We've actually hired talent off of messages they left on our answering machine.
throw everything I said away.
No, but that's
What's
not the way
phone
we
number?
Choose to do it. That's not the way we choose to do it. But actually, this is years ago, probably 10 years ago, but they were looking for a voice for CBS Daytime, you know, to do all the announcing for all the soap operas. It was a huge contract someone was going to get, and the guy who ended up getting it got it by leaving a message on our answering machine that I then played for the head of marketing for CBS, and he got the gig.
That's great.
His voice was so perfect that it came through on an answering machine, and he was a voice for a few years. But normally, I mean, you have to realize all that matters is where you stack up against your competition. And if all your competition is sending really nicely compressed, loud, present, poppy recordings, and you're there, you know, and it sounds like you were singing or talking into the wrong end of the microphone, it doesn't matter how good your voice is. You're just not going to get the gig because it's all about how you compare to everybody else.
But, you know, I'll play the opposite side.
Okay.
I think there's voice over, which sometimes is thought of as announcers. Then there's voice acting.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the opposite, because when we do, I mean, we do a tremendous amount of casting and recording for video games. And one of the things that I hate is when someone's like, come on, we've got to go, you know. They're doing that announcer voice as they're, you know, come on, you know, save me, help me, whatever the action type of dialogue is. And I hate it because it sounds like it's that AM big microphone.
Right, right.
I'd rather, a lot of times we put, if I see a voice actor that leans into the mic, I'll put a dummy mic up. Ah. So I'll have one mic up there that he thinks he's talking to, or maybe it's even in his headphones. And there'll be another mic just a little bit further, because we need realistic sounding. And when we were talking about voice talent, if they start getting the voice in, you know, that they just start going into the voice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, you need it to be natural. And whether you're playing a normal person, whether you're playing a creatures, aliens, of anything of the genres that the fantasy genres that often happen in video games, it needs to be enchanted. It needs to be something interesting. And it needs to be acted. And we go back and forth. In film, when we go for ADR, it has to be totally natural.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And you need to hear everything, but there's throwaway lines, and you don't want everything to be enunciated, and you don't want everything to be clear. You want it to be
a little messy.
A little messy, but animated. I mean, it was interesting. Years ago, I did a movie called American Beauty, and it was interesting watching Sam, the director, take the actors from actors to the place where they ended up in the movie, which is saying lines in a very unnatural way, but very animated and very cool.
Right.
Because the rhythm of the gait of the way they were talking was very different. And a lot of times, the only person with Kevin Spacey, who was doing a lot of the announcing, which interestingly enough, at the beginning of the movie, he does that whole announcing voiceover piece.
Right.
We did that in his dressing room. We brought him to an ADR stage. We couldn't get the performance right. He could never match it. So we just did. We kept that one, cleaned it up. And everybody else, we had to psychologically manipulate them to get those kind of performances. Mm-hmm. So it happens all the way across.
So really, you know, that's a good point. The fact that you also have to figure out what role you're auditioning for, and if it's acting, you know, you gotta have your acting chops.
Well, I'd also recommend to any actors, don't be afraid to ask a question. I can't tell you how many times I've auditioned for something and, you know, my agent sends me the details and I, if I'm just slightly unclear, he knows me well enough, I can say a little like this that I do, or a little bit more like this other thing that I do, or whatever. And then when I'm actually doing it, it's, you know, I've had to do the spots you and I were talking about where I've got to announce all the Hitachi whatever. And, you know, I started falling into the announcery voice, and a good director can make a huge amount of difference when they say, like you were talking about Sam Mendes, you know, they've got to just be able to tell the actor, no, bring it down, make it real, make it more interesting, slow it down, relax, think of this, think of that sometimes.
That's right.
A great director is it's worth everything.
Yeah. Now, let me change to the opposite side now. Let's go from the engineer's point of view, and then I'll talk to you, Rob. If you're going to
let's give the listeners some tips about recording some good VO. Let's say you have a gig and you're going to do that. What kind of things do you suggest, you know, when you want to record? Let's say you pick your microphone. Where do you place the mic? Do you put them in front? Do you use a windscreen? Do you put them off to the side? I mean, what kind of tips can you give people out there?
I mean, you definitely don't want to overly pop your P's and T's and things. So you should use a windscreen if it sounds like you're popping P's. It's an easy enough thing to do. The main thing that a lot of people don't realize that the client that they're trying to do this, and I usually deal with announcers more than voice actors, although we've done a bunch of voice acting and ADR work too. But the main thing that most commercial clients are just unbelievably finicky about is being able to understand every syllable, every consonant, every vowel. You have to basically present every word as if every letter matters, but you have to do it in a way where it doesn't sound like you're forcing it.
Right.
And that just comes with experience. It's not easy. Most people trail off at the end of phrases or words. It's not so easy to have the last syllable of a sentence have the same importance as the first syllable. But that's really important when you're doing a read. These clients have this maniacal belief that every single syllable of their announcement is important. And they want to hear every single syllable. Right. And that sort of has always differentiated to me the difference between a good voiceover talent and a great one.
Right.
Because a great one can emphasize every syllable. You know, they'd say the word syllable and the L at the end would be just as strong as the S at the beginning. Mm. But it wouldn't sound forced. And that takes a lot of practice because it's not a natural way to talk.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Well, here's a couple tips that I want to give people is the first thing you should do is, you know what? Check the pattern of your pickup on your microphone. All right. If you're going to record VO, don't use a figure eight. You know, don't, you're going to be picking up the noise in the background. I mean, you really should, first of all, check how your microphone works. That's, you know, and if you got a nice, you know, cardioid pattern and you got your mic. The second thing is like Rob said, is what you want to do is you want to really think about the airflow of the air coming out of the mouth. And if you set it up so that they're talking straight into the microphone, if you don't have a good windscreen, they're going to be popping their peas and things like that. So come off at an angle, you know, hit them from either the right or the left side and let the air pass by the microphone, but yet you can still pick up, you know, all their voice. You can still pick up all the presence of it.
You know, something that you can learn a lot from singers, like if you ever watch like Stevie Wonder live or in the studio or, you know, any singers of that kind of caliber, they basically have compression built into their neck. If he's going to hit a loud note, he turns his head to the side or he leans his head back, which, you know, technical singing coaches would say is not the way to get a high note out, but some people it works for. But the idea is you have to keep in mind that the mic in front of you is just a dumb device that, for the most part, is just picking up at a single level unless you have compressors and stuff. So it's your responsibility. If you're going to be a little bit loud, back off the mic a little bit. Turn your head a little bit. Do something so you're not blasting directly into it and learn how to work it like an instrument.
Exactly. Knowing what that does because, you know, if you go really close to the mic, you get proximity effect.
Right.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get bass tone. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's understand what mics you've got. A lot of times when we do, especially some big actors that are on the clock in a big way, we'll put up three mics. And because a lot of times we don't know what we're going to get.
Right.
We might put definitely a shotgun mic.
Yeah.
We'll put a large diaphragm mic. And because some people, a lot of times we'll do it instead of doing it on the side because I find most actors feel the need to talk into a mic. So instead of going sideways, they'll just turn the head right into the diaphragm.
Right.
Because it's also a bigger, fuller sound. So a lot of times we'll go higher. So we'll actually mic them down. So literally, if they're nasal sounding, we change it up.
Right.
So you've got to listen to the instrument that you're recording, the human instrument. So we'll go a little bit higher. We'll go a lot of times for natural talk, about 3 feet, 3 feet up, 3 feet away from their face, at an angle. If I feel that they need, I'll put something close to them. Again, if they feel that, look, what really has to happen, whether it's music or VO, the performer needs to be comfortable.
Right.
They need to not really realize they're in a booth. They just need to be able to do their thing, and we need to be flies on the wall to be able to capture it. So that's, you know, with headphones, not headphones.
I was going to say, have you noticed any difference with the headphones? Because I find that I personally I'm more natural when I don't have the headphones.
Yeah.
When I'm just hearing myself in a room like I normally hear myself in a room, then I'm talking like I talk in a room with people.
You bring up a good point.
Put the headphones on, I'm hearing myself like that, and it's like, I really want to listen. I want to hear. Am I doing it right?
There's a strategy.
And then you have to, lick at the microphone
because I
want to hear it.
If I feel that you're sometimes talking too loud or too soft, by adjusting your headphones, right, that can change your performance.
But you bring up a good point, because the VO that I was talking about is more like narration, if you were going to be narration. And that's a great point. The fact that you really got to know what you're recording. As an engineer, you got to know, are you going to be doing ADR? Are you going after the performance? Are you going after, the voice, more of a narration type of thing? Because like Bob was saying, like if I'm recording somebody and I'm going for a radio spot and they need to be the voice of God, we'll put them on headphones, because they will absolutely, it's easier for them to go into that mode, that broadcast mode. But if you're doing ADR and you want them to be a little bit more natural, it's not uncommon just to say, yeah, no, whatever. Just sit there and here's your script and let's do a read. If you want them to be a little bit more natural, like Bob was saying. And that's a great point.
And if you've got actors that fidget, which I know a lot do, I'll put a tram on them. Or lavalier. So you put it on them, and if they kind of, because they kind of keep moving like
absolutely
this, and all of a sudden they just do it, and they're twitchy, and they're whatever they are, then we'll just, again, try to capture it.
It's also really difficult to do voice acting without gesturing and moving.
Yeah.
Especially, sometimes you want that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you're going to get the actor who's going to be gesturing and moving because it's, whatever it is. You're, hey, come on, let's go. We got to run. And you right. can't help it. I'm doing it right now, So you're going to get all that movement. That's not uncommon.
And occasionally what we've done to even go crazier, sometimes we do it outside.
Yeah?
Where what we've done, I've done it a handful of times where, we'll grab the actors and whether it's through Loop Group or whether it's video games, where at one point, early in my career, I did a movie called Born on the 4th of July. And we had the actors, and they, come on, get out of the hooch, we gotta go, and all this stuff. And it sounded so forced, and it sounded like ADR. It sounded like all the stuff that we want to get rid of. So I had an idea, and I was kind of naive in the industry at that time. I said, well, I used to record location sound, so why don't we go outside? We grabbed the mic, and they went, we don't normally do that, but okay. And we waited for the airplanes to go by and found a park that was good. And then we had them run around, and we had the slap. We had the diffusion of open space. Yeah. So all of a sudden, when you see them fighting, also the other thing is, and I don't know why this happens, there'll be an action sequence, and they'll be having to talk over helicopter, jets, fighting, and they don't, hey, we've got to go. And they've got that voice where they're, come on, we got, they're not right. yelling.
Now, I'm a layperson, and I got to tell you, I've noticed that 1,000 times. What I notice it most is when there's a scene, they're in a bar.
Yeah.
And they're pumping music, and everybody's dancing. And when they shot it, there was no music playing. There wasn't. And so they're like, so where are you from? I don't know about you, but I've been in a bar in America in the last 40 years. And it's like, hey, so what are you doing later? That's how you've got to talk in these goddamn places.
And to mix it on our side,
yeah.
All of a sudden, you've got the music thumping, you got people yelling, the glass clinks are going, and it's a big deal. Because now all of a sudden, they want to energize the scene musically through source music, but it can't cut it through the dialogue.
Right.
So now I've got to protect the dialogue, so now I'm going to bring the music back, and the scene sometimes sits flat.
Yeah, it looks like it's just a bumping party going on, and everybody's just talking in normal room tones.
If you want to see a really great example of doing that dialogue out in location, is you should watch Fantastic Mr. Fox. I don't know if you know that, but all their dialogue was recorded in the environment.
I heard that, yeah.
Of where they were. So if they were in the barn, they actually went out to a farm and had a boom operator.
It's also a psychological effect on you, the place where you are. And I was going to say something about sounds in music. The way you use microphones, those have to be used as in a creative way. Yeah. Most of the time you just put the microphone on the stand and that's it. No, put your headphones on and start exploring with microphones. That's really a very interesting way to discover, proximity effect, how you can enhance the dimension of a sound with that.
It just depends if you've got the actors and they're willing to do it. Because a lot of actors go, I got 2 hours, we're starting it, well, we're going out.
But, you know, yeah. in Diego's defense, though, if you could just use your voice and find out the characteristics of the microphone. I'll tell you, like, for instance, I used the windscreen, you know, typical, you know, yeah. big round disc that looks like you can make it out of a...
most of the time people do that.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, and what I do is, as I know that the... usually the VO person, you know, they're programmed to talk into that. So I'll set that up so that they can talk into that. But if I, you know, if I want to come off at an angle a little bit, I'll have it, the microphone angled behind it. So they're talking, they feel comfortable.
Right.
But then I can still come out a little bit at an angle so I don't get the air and it works out great. And so, you know, that's just all messing around and just, you know, just knowing your room. And
yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah.
And in the room that I record a lot of stuff in, especially for the announcer type of Voice of God stuff, it's all about getting them close because I don't want to hear my room because it sounds ugly. You know, so as much as I can get them on the microphone. And yet the second thing I want to, you know, another thing I want to say is if you're an engineer and you have to have a microphone in their face, by all means, make it comfortable so that they can read the script.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's no good getting that mic up in their face and everything, and you have this big windscreen if they can't read that script.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
We started using video monitors for the script.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, they can just sit there and it can move and the director go next page.
Yeah, it's a good time saver.
And you can change text size.
And do you use like a prompter? Rob, do you use like a prompter program?
Well, for ADR, we use a system called VoiceCue, which actually lets the dialogue, the script, scroll on the bottom of the screen right under where you see the actors talking.
Oh, nice.
And it's an awesome system for doing ADR. But a lot of times we'll just, if it's just a static piece of dialogue, we'll just have a big screen fed off the word processor or whatever, you know, just showing a computer screen.
I'm really glad you guys are taking all that into consideration because as a voice actor, I can't tell you how frustrating it is to have that giant mic right there and you can't see the piece of paper on the music stand or whatever. And the thing also, if it's a full page of talking, my chin is up here for the top line. My chin is down here for the next line. So not only is my voice, my face is angled differently to the mic. You don't sound the same when you tuck your chin into your neck, you know, and it's that kind of thing is also kind of a factor.
Just to make it even more fun, we have a new kind of voice recording we're doing now. And that is not only are we doing voice recording, but we're doing facial mocap.
Ha ha.
Motion capture.
Yeah, that's another challenge.
So I would say that now 90%
animation projects.
All the video games and animation.
Oh,
absolutely.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So what's happening is, as we record all our actors, it's not just about being voice talent anymore. Now they're being facial talent.
Yep.
So they have to visually act with their face and their mouth and their eyes, and we're recording them and we're sending data out.
Wow.
Because it's silly to try to animate somebody's mouth to kind of work with it.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have special hardware and software that we use. And so the voice actor is now somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Where now they've got to be able to project. They've got to be able to move their heads and pause in certain ways.
How do you solve the problem of having the mock-up equipment, you know, able to see all the points and the microphone in the middle? How did you where do you position the mic? Do you put it below?
It's a non-issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, the way we've got some pretty advanced stuff.
Oh, I see.
That we've got cameras situated. There's more than one camera.
Right. No, I know. It's all around. Right. It's
But they'll be able to interpolate.
Oh, so yes. We can.
So we can have the microphone where it needs to be.
Right.
And then, you know.
It will be reconstructed after those points that are covered during the recording.
And then everybody can look like Beowulf. wasn't Ray Winstone who did that voice? He's like this rotund British dude who's like balding. And they made him look like, you know, 300. Yeah. He's like, I am Beowulf!
But you could save so much money now for the clients.
Yeah. So. That's amazing. Well, hey, listen, we're gonna have to start wrapping this up, but... you know, I hope that helps you out with VO. I mean, I think we've covered everything. And
you know what? There's one little tip we didn't cover that's so common and so basic, but a lot of people may not realize it. And that is if you're comfortable with or without headphones or experimenting with that, it's still really common to just take one ear off.
Oh, yeah.
One ear on.
Oh.
Or buy headphones that have one ear.
Or buy, yeah, just half a set of headphones, basically. But that's really common. It's common for singers. It's common for voiceovers. Oh, yeah. And don't be afraid to do that. If you start doing it professionally, it is a good idea to have the headphones that have one ear only so that you don't have a lot of bleed from the cue system.
That's true.
But don't be afraid to do that. It's still really, really common.
That was good.
Thank you.
That was a great.
And remember, if they take it off and they put it on the stand, shut the headphones off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point.
And don't hang your headphones off the microphone.
Exactly.
All right. Well, you know what? That concludes part two of our VO extravaganza.
Wow.
But hey, Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It was great. Yes. And see, that was like total announcer guy right there.
Thank you very much for having me. I've had a great time. I got to tell you, it's a swell bunch of fellas around this table, and you should really tune in to the Audio Nowcast on iTunes.
That's Maria, a cheesy
thank
announcer.
Thank you for joining us. And
yeah, seriously, Maria, shut up.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that I got to do my my only piece, my Maria feature, and Harrison next to Bob. It's really very easy since he doesn't know anything about the industry.
But
I just want to wash my hands now.
As well, you should.
Not in a bad way.
But you know what? Actually, what's really interesting is Maria. She's starting her voiceover career, and and I invited her down because I knew Bob, you were going to be here, and I knew Scott, you know, and he hires a lot of VO people, and she has a really great voice. She got the H1N1 campaign, but is also bilingual, so she's going to do it a lot.
Well, that was really difficult.
The thing is what's really interesting is she has a low tone. Her range is very low, and especially with you know, Hispanic women, a lot of the VO is in the upper register. You hear a lot of higher timbred voices. And so I've been in sessions where we've been looking for a little bit more sultry actress. And so I think you have a good career ahead of you, Maria.
Thank you, Mike. And just a little bit of insight, as you were so kind to introduce me with such wonderful words. I am starting my VO, essentially my VO career. I feel like what Bob was saying, growing up, it's always been one of those things that the voice has been used for so many things and in so many different ways that until now in my life journey where I'm at now, I realized, hello, like the voice is the one thing that everyone in my life I can think of would always say, that voice, you have such a great voice. And you know, some guys would say, hey, have you ever had a 900 number? So, you know, everything, all types of feedback I've received. So I'm very excited. I sing as well. So it's definitely, voice has always been a big part of my communication and my expression creatively. And as Mike said, I have a deeper voice, as you can hear.
So just always keep the performances a little bit more subtle than Domingo, Domingo, Domingo.
Sábado gigante. That would be good. That would be good.
Actually, I know exactly why she got the H1N1 is because if you listen to the performance, she's not acting. She's just talking. And it's such it's really an honest, non-forced delivery, and you can't fake that stuff. That's the kind of stuff that you hear. It's like, yeah, that's what we need.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's always a mixture of having the natural talent and the natural voice, but also understanding that your voice is a product and a commodity, and understanding what the clients are going to want to hear. Because you can have the most sultry voice in the world, but if you mumble and you're not getting the message across, it's not going to work. It's like there are millions of people. All you have to do is watch American Idol to see how people are told they're great singers when they're actually horrible. There are plenty of people being told they have an awesome voice for announcing who may have, you know, some interesting characteristic to their voice. But it's about more than just having that natural ability. You have to learn how to deliver the product that a client's going to want to pay for someday.
Yeah.
And also I think it's every culture has a different perception of what they want voices to be.
Yes. Right.
Because
in
video games, we work with a lot of Japanese companies or Spanish companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a bigger machismo character, it's got to be deeper. And if you're Japanese and you've got to be a woman, it's got to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
So every culture has a perception of femininity, masculinity, of comedy, of drama, of just pure vocal
To review the rank, you to buy the touching
turns. Wow. Just listening, ready for Japanese. Words.
Just listening. Yes. You know, Tom Cruise is, you know, he's nuts, but he always plays like a tough guy, a macho guy, you know what I mean?
And
Tom Cruise, yeah, well, Night and Day, Mission Impossible, you know what I mean? It's like, he does.
Small guy try to act tough?
He's a small guy who also has a voice that's like way up here too. He's got that high voice, and listen to how he's dubbed in probably in Italy and Spain and all over the place. He's probably a lot more like, come on, we got to get out of here.
No, actually, voice in Italy, it's more like the voice of a young boy, because they started dubbing him when, you know, he did Top Gun.
Yeah.
So the voice remains with the character.
Oh, really?
It doesn't really sound like a...
They don't try to machismo it up more than his own voices?
No, no, no. I think it's very close to the actual voice.
Oh, wow.
They're trying to now, yeah. I mean, it used to be... I saw All in the Family in Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, Meathead was... the high voice and Archie was much deeper voice because
a little bit more telenovela, really.
Yeah, I mean...
extremes.
It was hilarious. Now... one of the coolest things that Disney did, and they have a demo of it, which would just blow your mind, what they did, and I think it was with Pocahontas or one of them, they literally go from language to language, and it sounds like the same actors.
Mm. Really?
And they do it in a way that they just start changing languages seamlessly. And they did this as a demo, and they went through all the 33 languages that Disney puts out. And they did this thing, and they're all, like, talking and singing, and they just keep crossfading between the languages, and in sync visually.
Wow.
And you just sit there, and I saw this, and I went, that is the coolest thing.
Pretty impressive.
Because it's always Pocahontas. It's the same voice.
No, they did that with The Little Mermaid. I actually worked on the music. They did that for The Little Mermaid. And had it
That's
sung
awesome.
In every single one of those languages, too. It was incredible.
Well, I can do that by myself.
Well, what I want to hear from you is, I want to hear, how do you say in Spanish, how do you call someone a meathead?
You don't.
That was a classy answer.
Well, you saw All in the Family, you know. I'm thinking,
I don't
share
that.
En Español?
No, I don't share the five
carne
bad words in
cabeza.
Spanish. No, I will tell you, though, you know, as far as culture, when we were doing the H1N1 and doing that in Spanish, you know, because Spanish language is in many different countries, not just in Mexico, not just in España, not just in, you know, and there are different dialects and different, there's just so much variety that essentially I know that one of the biggest attractions is the neutral Spanish. And I thank God that I'm neutral. So, but you know, something that I did that was very important in practicing with the Spanish was the timing, because there are more words in Spanish than there are in English. Yeah. And we still only had the same 15 seconds or the same 30 seconds. And at the same time, all going along with the
same
thing.
Well, the legal disclaimers at the end of those must just be like John Machida Jr.
Well, yeah. I mean, the guy who does the legal disclaimers for the stuff you worked on, it's just, it's
a
machine gun.
Isn't it time stretched? It's just real.
But you know what? They get it.
It sounds
90%.
Time stretched.
They get it 90%. They are flying. And then I may have to help it out another 10. But see, the problem is when you're – when you're talking fast, you cannot time compress that more and like more than just a few percentages, because if you get like literally more than 10%,
but there are
it's gonna sound
they
definitely do have that. I'm not saying especially, I mean, you hear it all the time, but if you're trying to keep it honest and real and just do a good job, you get them to fly as fast as they
can. Oh yeah, it's difficult.
That part is difficult. And if you have to bring it in frames, like I'll do, you know, literally just maybe 4 frames.
Yeah,
you know?
Because
if you squish it any more than that, then
it will just break
the
natural
cadence and the
reality.
Format. It just sounds weird.
It's an odd delivery.
Yeah.
When we were doing a Shoot 'Em Up, and we had what was the actress's name? Italian actress. Pacelli? No. There's one actress, and you could tell that the English was probably a third language. Because she was saying the words in the most oddest delivery. And we all watched it.
The inflections.
The inflections.
Yeah. Valeria
Galina.
It was
almost like, say the words. And she said it enough that it was a sentence, but not in a way that anyone would ever say that sentence. And you sat there and went, huh.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd. So all through the times, she had these great one-liners. that a lot of we couldn't use. We went. You just listened, and you were thrown out of the scene because she had such an odd delivery. Yeah,
as soon as she was done talking, you'd take like a three Mississippi to translate it in your head.
Exactly.
And go, oh, that's
it's
funny.
Like, it's but then like the scene is moved on. You got all the words are there,
right?
But she put them together in a sentence that just sounded odd.
You know what happens? It happens because when you move, your accent basically transforms into something else.
Yeah.
But you never really lose the original accent.
Or she kept the accent.
Yeah,
but it
becomes something different and becomes actually something very creative and unique.
Creative is good.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we're going to have to wrap this up, really.
Right.
But
I just started.
This is a good time to start talking about
what you're
thinking.
I just started. I know.
Come on, kids, you got to go.
But hey, if you have any comments or questions for anybody on the podcast today, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Before we go, Rob, you working on anything that you can talk about?
Actually, we're working on a few extremely cool things. I will be able to talk about them more in detail next time because they'll be done by then. But we just landed two national commercial accounts that I'm writing music and doing the sound design for.
Nice.
And we hadn't been going after that kind of work for a while. But we're back doing it, and it's been incredibly, incredibly cool. The other thing is the City Love Music Contest at citylovemusic.com. Now up to about 200 songs submitted. And that website has been working very well, which is good because I wouldn't have time to fix it if it was broken anyway. And that's it. The last few weeks I've been mostly just writing music, scoring to picture, which has been really fun.
Nice. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back with a budget, finally.
Bob, you got anything you want to plug? You got your podcast?
The Bob Bendick, not the Bob Bendick podcast, just BobBendickPodcast.com. I'm currently on summer hiatus, but I've got 40 interviews up right now with various actors, comedians, director.
And they're big.
Some good names. I got Adam Carolla, Kevin Pollak, Robert Forster, Robert Dobby,
Maria
Matthew
Mendoza.
Lillard, and a few other. Soon, appearing soon. Maria Mendoza. So check that podcast out. Go to iTunes to find it. And other than that, I'm going to start doing stand-up again at the end of the year and, you know, put some stuff up on my website about it. But
really? Stand-up?
Yeah, I've been doing stand-up for years.
That'd be fun.
I tell hilarious jokes.
Really? Can we heckle you? Can we be like the Planet Heckler?
Oh, God. You know, that's what every comedian needs. Yes, please, too.
Gift from God.
Yeah, I start opening up and sharing about my life in a painful yet funny way. It's touching. And then I hear a guy in the back go, play Freebird! You suck!
See? It worked. And Maria, H1N1, we can hear you on those. And
yes, H1N1, and as well, I actually am, believe it or not, working on my own website.
Right.
I'm going to be doing some podcasts. I'm going to actually be doing, currently I'm going to call it a love project.
Nice.
No 911 numbers, no 900 numbers, no 411s, nothing like that. It's just a love project. Positive message, uplifting people that need just a little bit of encouragement, and ideally we'll get to a point where we can have a daily brand new message.
That's definitely out of you guys. Rob, listen to that. Scott, what about you? I know you've got Charlie.
It coming out in was it July 30th?
Wait, Charlie St. Cloud.
Charlie St. Cloud.
Yeah,
and it's actually a very good film.
Yeah, previews look good.
No, it's good, and we just got finished working on it last Saturday.
Great.
And Zach is dreaming.
And Zach, you know what? It's interesting. He's you know, it's always one hand. It's hard to get in the business, and the other part, it's hard to stay in the business.
All right.
And I think he's trying to transform his career from High School Musical Disney kid, like so many people that have popped out of that, to a dramatic actor. And he's done actually a pretty decent job. I think that it's...
Is he like on a Johnny Depp trajectory, out of 21 Jump Street?
You don't know. I mean, it's interesting how far Johnny Depp went with Edward Scissorhands. So that was like, wow, that's Johnny Depp. Nobody knew it. I don't know if he's going to go that far. I don't know if he needs to. He's still got the leading guy. I think I've heard one of his next films, he's going to play a cocaine guy.
Wow.
So he's really he's looking to get away from that. But it's also hard because at the same point, you got to support your fan base. And there's a lot of the female public that looks forward to seeing his movies. And, you know, you can't, you know.
Did you see 17 again? That was funny.
Yeah, it's the same director. Oh, okay. Same group.
This is a good movie.
Yeah. I liked it. No, it's the same. And this is a good one. This is actually a hard subject. It, originally, the full book is Death and Life of Charlie St. Cloud.
Wow.
So it's got a actually dark undertones to it. So I finished that and doing a bunch of jumping onto some video games before I start my next set of movies. Wow. And oh, by the way, sorry to thank you for helping me, Monica Bellucci.
There it is.
Sorry about that.
If I knew before, I could have
iPhones. So IMDb.
So if you go see Charlie St. Cloud, stay for the credits, and you'll see Scott's name go by.
Nice.
Diego, what about you? What new thing are you making music with now?
The other day, I was recording the Lemon Tree. Because I was
The orange tree?
No. I had a lemon tree.
What are you, drunk?
And I was trying. And I was trying something because I found some additional new ideas. So that was an experiment that I was working on, and it's going to evolve into something else. But I also like, you know, to let these projects float in a natural way.
Right.
And I'm also building something else. It's an instrument / device kind of thing.
Wow.
And I think it's going to be really interesting if I make it work as I am imagining it.
Wow.
But
we'll make it work.
I got an idea.
And it will play you.
Let's take a watermelon, pop a lav in it with a radio mic, and drop it from a building.
Yay!
Great.
And record the actual watermelon from the inside.
Great. Okay, you're going to be dropping the thing. I mean, I want to do it with you. Okay?
It's going to involve the customized telescope.
Except, you know, somehow. I can see it already. Then Spectrasonics is going to come out with Melon Sphere. It's going to be the big hit in the Melon Sphere. It's going to have like 12,000 patches.
Awesome. And the first guy in line is Gallagher.
That's great, man. I'm looking forward to seeing some more stuff like that. What do you think, ETA?
No, okay, I don't have any. It's just something that it has to flow in a natural way. Yes.
Nice. That's great. That's about it. If you guys have any comments or questions, you can reach us on our Facebook page because we are dropping our MySpace page.
Are most people.
You still had a MySpace page?
Yeah, we did.
It's not MySpace anymore.
You can come see us on our CompuServe and Prodigy pages. Yeah. Very hopping these days.
You know, I was listening to this podcast on my A-track.
Or you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com, or you can reach Bob and complain about everything he said at
BobBendickPodcast.com.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Woo! Peace out, dog.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.